Chapter 12. Tanaka. The girl was staring at her, arms crossed defiantly, so certain of her place in the natural order, comfortable with the absolute necessity of her existence. Tanaka had seen that attitude before in other people, many times. She had also seen the surprise and hurt in their eyes as they died. Tanaka had no such illusions. Anyone could die at any time, and the universe didn't give a shit. So while the girl stood in front of her, shielded by nothing but the accident of having a powerful daddy, Tanaka wore an armored suit of woven carbon silicate lace that would stop anything short of a rocket launcher under her clothes. "I'm a little tired of being talked about like I was luggage. This isn't a conversation between him and you. This is a conversation with me. I decide what ship I leave this place on, not him." Oh, little girl, Tanaka thought. You have no idea. It made her hands itch to have Duarte's daughter so close and not just grab her. A dozen quick steps and she'd have the girl, the escaped prisoner, and the terrorist who was apparently not dead despite having been shot in the head back on Laconia. But killing the kid had a lot of downside, and the risk wasn't zero. So instead, she smiled and spread her hands a little wider, trying to seem as non-threatening as possible. James Holden might be rounding the corner from middle age into old, but he was still dangerous, and the lump of gristle next to him that went by Amos Burton had more than one question mark next to him in her book. Tanaka didn't underestimate either of them. The dog started barking and bouncing up and down on its front paws. It wasn't a trained attack animal, just an old pet. She knew from the file the girl would be easier to control if they didn't kill it. "We're all friends here," she smiled at them, willing it to be true. A large caliber pistol loaded with high explosive rounds pressed into the small of her back in case it turned out they weren't. "Venom 1, a voice said in her ear. "Check, check." "Venom 2 at southwest corner. I've got Holden," came a different voice. "Venom 4 northeast. I've got Bluto," said a third. "3 covering south." Tanaka smiled. Whatever happened from here in, her enemy was well and truly fucked. "All right," Tanaka said to Teresa, playing for time. "Please come with me. Do it now, and in return, I won't kill your friends." The girl looked uncertain. She'd never believe a threat made to her, not really, but threats to her friends, she believed. Her file made it clear she had significant abandonment issues. If things like that didn't make you strong, they made you weak. "You hearing this?" Venom 1 asked, his mic buzzing with background noise as he spoke. A distant rumble was growing, the tall, sword-like foliage whipping as something blasted toward them. The girl was talking, but whatever she was saying was drowned out by the noise. "Sparrowhawk," Tanaka said, activating the bone mic in her jaw.
"Mugabu here."
"Rosinante is Oscar Mike," she said.
"On our way,"
Mugabu replied. He'd hidden her ship around the far side of the planet to avoid detection. She'd known that was a risk. She didn't regret it. Not yet, at least.
"I'll be to you in 20.
Tanaka's gaze flickered across what was about to be a battlefield. She probably couldn't stall for 20. "Forget me," she said to Mugabu. "Stay on the Rosinante. Do not let it leave this planet with the girl on board."
"Are you authorizing force, even if the girl is on board?"
Tanaka didn't answer. She needed to get her hands on the target before the Rosinante showed up. She couldn't risk losing the girl if the situation went violent. And when her team moved on the two adults and the Sparrowhawk showed up overhead,
things were liable to go very violent indeed. Out of time and out of options. Something like pleasure flowed through her. It was time for someone to make a decision. "You have to the count of three," Tanaka shouted at the girl as she beckoned. "Come to me. One." Burton shoved the girl behind him and pulled his gun. The Rocinante blasted into view, barely skimming the tops of the foliage, the powerful landing thrusters in her belly flattening everything it passed over. Tanaka found herself impressed by the recklessness of the maneuver. Here she was, working so hard not to put the girl in any danger, and the Rocinante crew was willing to throw a spaceship at her to keep her away. "Venom, take the girl!" she shouted over the deafening sound of the ship, pulling her gun from behind her back in a smooth, practiced motion. Burton saw her do it, and drew down on her as he continued pushing the girl back toward the approaching ship. Tanaka dove behind a low stone planter box just as he fired, the bullet blowing a fountain of soil into the air. "Shots fired," one of her team said. 5mm caseless, low threat," someone else said, as flat and emotionless as if he were placing a lunch order. "They're firing at me," Tanaka shouted back. "Get the girl!" "Free fire?" Venom One, the team leader, asked. "No, no shooting. Pull the other two apart with your hands if you need to, but do not risk firing toward the girl," Tanaka yelled, then peeked up over the planter box. Holden, Burton, and the girl were about 30 meters away now, still backing up. The Rocinante had taken up position about 250 meters farther away, still hovering on its landing jets. It would have to put down to let them board, but the pilot wasn't taking any chances. A metallic blue figure dropped into the courtyard between Tanaka and Holden, then darted toward the fleeing group in a blur. 3 more figures dropped from the canopy above, surrounding Holden and the girl. Burton pointed his gun at one and started firing. "Taking fire," Venom 2 reported. Her team moved toward the three, not returning fire, but moving fast, aggressively. The old-style Martian Navy sidearms Holden and Burton carried would never penetrate a modern suit of Laconian power armor. They could fire their guns dry, and her team would just walk up and snap their necks. Quick, neat, almost no danger to the girl unless Burton shot her. But the old mechanic was careful and methodical as he fired. Every shot hit one of Tanaka's team, and he kept the girl behind him. Venom 3 was the closest, only a few meters from Holden, when the world exploded. A blinding flash and a concussion like someone had hit her in the chest. Tanaka dove back behind her planter box, her mind trying to make the detonation into her team having disobeyed orders and opened fire. But the guns on the Laconian armor weren't that loud. Nothing was that loud. A quick look over the planter box told her that all 4 members of her team were down. No, not down. Literally blown apart. She could see the remains of Venom 2, an undifferentiated pile of meat and technology spread across a few meters of ground. In the distance, the barrels of the Rocinante's point defense cannons were fully extended and swiveling as they looked for new targets. PDC fire in atmosphere, with their own people between the ship and its target. If she'd had time to think about it, she'd have been impressed by the audacity. Tanaka jumped up to her feet and ran flat out toward one of the school buildings surrounding the courtyard, looking for cover. She imagined one of those PDC barrels snapping around with merciless machine speed to lock onto her. If it fired, she'd never hear the shots that ended her. Against a warship's PDC rounds, her fancy armored undersuit might as well be silk pajamas. She made it to the wall of the school building. The Rocinante, hovering on its maneuvering thrusts, was completely blocked from her line of sight.
She didn't think a pilot who flew for James Holden would shoot through a school to get her. But she displaced to another nearby building anyway. Once the shooting had started, people could panic and do things they would never have imagined themselves doing otherwise. Better not to risk it. The roar of the ship's thrusters rose in pitch, then began to cycle down. The ship had landed. They'd blown her team apart, sent her running, and decided the coast was clear. The coast is decidedly not clear, motherfuckers. Tanaka sprinted out from behind the building and into the tall native grass. She ran parallel to the path Holden and the crew were taking toward the ship, staying far enough away to hopefully hide the sound of her movement. If anyone could still hear anything after the ear-shattering blast of the Rosinante's PDCs firing in atmosphere. Even if they caught something on thermals, they might think twice about accidentally shooting a bystander. Might. They were a pretty fucking reckless bunch. She was going to enjoy taking them down. After 30 meters, she slowed down and angled in toward the three fleeing shapes. She was still 12 meters away from them when she caught a glimpse of Holden in his dark Martian armor heading toward the ship. He wasn't looking in her direction. Through the ringing in her ears, she was almost certain she could hear the dog barking, so the girl had to be nearby. Tanaka angled away and put on more speed, staying low but getting ahead of them. The surface of the tall native grass was covered in tiny hooks that tugged at her clothes when she brushed against them. When she accidentally hit one with the back of her hand, it left a painful abrasion, like a rug burn. She ignored it. She had the scent of blood, and her prey was just a few meters away. When Tanaka felt she'd gotten far enough ahead of them, she moved back to the edge of the grass and waited. The ship had gone quiet. The grass hummed its white noise around her. From further down the path, the dog was barking. She heard Holden's voice. "Hurry! They'll have backup coming!" They were 12 meters or so away and moving toward her. They were trotting, but she'd been faster. One step ahead. Tanaka stepped out of the grass, leveling her pistol at Holden. The look of surprise on his face would have been comical in any other context. The girl shrieked with alarm and grabbed at her dog's collar as it barked furiously. "I can't let you leave with that girl." Holden had his gun in his hand, but it was down at his side. He shifted his weight like he was going to make a move, but Tanaka just shook her head at him and pointed her gun at his face. "If I spray you all over that girl, she'll panic. If she runs, things get even less predictable than this. No one wants that." Holden nodded and dropped the pistol. Then his gaze shifted to Tanaka's left shoulder. "Wait," she said. "Where's—"
"Right here,"
said a deep voice from behind her. Shit. She was one step behind. She was already swiveling to bring her gun to bear before the second word was out. Something heavy slammed into the side of her head and sent her spinning to the ground. Amos Burton stepped out of the grass, his hands balled up into fists.
"Hi,"
he said, moving toward her. The hit was solid. Jaw to inner ear. Her world was swimming. Tanaka rolled away and found her gun on the ground. She was bringing it up when Burton's boot connected with her forearm and sent the pistol flying off into the grass.
"What are you doing?"
Holden asked. "I'm getting my ass kicked," Tanaka thought, dazed enough to wonder why he was speaking to her.
"I think we might want to talk to this one," Burton said. "Let's take her with us."
Tanaka said, "No," and tried to stand, then let herself collapse again. "Look how hurt I am." It was only half bullshit. "Hurry up," Holden said, and started to lead the girl past her. Burton reached down to grab Tanaka's arm and yank her to her feet. He was very strong. That was good. It would make him overconfident. Tanaka let him pull her up, pushing hard with her legs as she rose and snapping her other arm up to drive her palm into the underside of the big man's chin. His head jerked back from the impact, but his grip on her left bicep didn't loosen. He raised his other arm and threw a massive fist at her face. With his hand gripping her, she couldn't dodge, so she whipped her head to the right and slapped at the punch, shoving it to the left. It still grazed her cheek, and the impact was enough to make that side of her face go numb. The motion brought him in closer, and Tanaka threw herself backward, letting the momentum of the punch and her own weight yank Burton off his feet and on top of her as she fell. He let go of her arm, trying by reflex to catch himself, and they both hit the ground. He landed on her like a falling tree, driving the air from her lungs. She was ready for it, though, and threw up an elbow that caught Burton in the throat as he dropped. He made a sound like an injured duck and rolled away, clutching at his neck. Tanaka bounced to her feet and looked for the girl. The swimming world whirled around her. She gritted her teeth and ignored it. The girl was hiding behind Holden, clutching at her dog and staring at the melee, her mouth a round O of surprise. He was digging around at his feet, trying to pick up his dropped gun. Tanaka could see hers, lying in the grass not too far away. Diving for it to take a rushed shot at Holden would be risky with the girl so close by. She raised a hand instead. "Holden, wait!"
"Leave him out of it," Burton said behind her. "We're not done yet."
Tanaka spun on the ball of her foot and lashed out with a kick at the spot the sound was coming from. The big mechanic casually swatted it away. He looked none the worse for wear after the throat strike that would have killed most people. Something was wrong with his eyes. They were flat black. She remembered reading about someone with eyes like that. She didn't remember who. "I've read your file," Tanaka said, backing toward Holden and the girl. She didn't have time for a boxing match with the strange-looking man with the eerie black eyes. Not when her best shots didn't seem to even faze him.
"Yeah?"
he asked, moving toward her. "It said we killed you," she said. "Any other time, I'd stay to figure that out." The girl was so close that if she could just get her balance, she could take two steps, grab her, and be running before the others knew what had happened. Tanaka would place bets they wouldn't shoot at her if she had the kid in her arms.
"You've got time," Burton said.
Tanaka turned toward the girl and then stopped short. Holden was standing in front of her, his gun in his hand. The eyes that had seemed frightened a moment ago were now flat, emotionless, cold. That's bad.
"No,"
he said. "She doesn't." Before Tanaka could even start to move, Holden's gun went off three times. She felt the three shots as hammer blows to her sternum. All three center mass, kill shots. She hadn't been certain until that moment that he had it in him. Tanaka staggered two steps toward the edge of the path and then collapsed on her face. The three slugs from Holden's gun pressed into her chest where the nanofiber undershirt had caught them, like daggers in the deep tissue bruise they'd left in her flesh. She ignored the pain and lay very still, holding her breath.
"Shit, Cap," Burton was saying. "I think we should have kept her."
"We have to go. We have to get out of here, now," Holden replied. He sounded angry. Based on her reading of his file, Tanaka would have bet he wasn't mad at the mechanic. He was angry he'd been forced to shoot someone. For all the shit he'd seen, the Laconian interrogator's psych evaluation said that Holden had never really grown comfortable with violence. "Don't come check my body," Tanaka willed at them.
"Let's get out of here before more of them show up," Holden said.
and the three of them started walking away. Moving as little as possible, Tanaka inched toward her gun. When she was able to put her right hand on it, she risked turning her head to see where they were. Holden and Burton were side by side, the girl between them. They were about 40 meters away. Not a very long shot, not for her. They were both wearing old Martian light body armor. The high explosive rounds in her pistol would go right through it. There was some risk of fragmentation hitting the girl, but it wasn't likely to be fatal. And fuck it, a little bruising might do the bitch some good. Tanaka rolled onto her back and sat up. She aimed at Burton's back. He was the more dangerous of the two. Kill him first. She lined up her sights between the big man's shoulder blades, took a long breath, let half of it out, and pulled the trigger. The round slammed into his back and blew out his chest like someone had swapped his heart with a grenade. Tanaka shifted her aim to Holden, who was already spinning, gun in hand. The big man took a couple more steps and fell over. She lined up on Holden's chest, then jerked her head as something cut a groove across her scalp. The report of the gunshot arrived a split second later. He figured out the body armor, Tanaka thought. He's taking the headshot. She moved, scrambling for cover in the grass and trying to line up her next shot. Holden was standing still, pivoting slowly at the waist to put his sights on her. It was a race now, and she was sighted in on his head, ready to pull the trigger and end it, when someone slammed a sledgehammer into her cheek. The other side of her mouth exploded out. The pain barely lasted long enough to notice, and everything was gone. Interlude, The Dreamer. The dreamer dreams, and her dream carries her deeper into intimacy with vastness. All through the wideness and flow, she sparkles, and the sparkles become thought where there was no thought before. The great slowness remains, soft and wide as the icy cold and all-encompassing sea, and the slowness, drifting, languid, shuffles and reshuffles itself. The sticky and the slippery, the bright and the dark, the moving and the moving, for there is no true stillness in the spark-filled substrate, and the sparks become a mind. The dreamer dreams, and others dream with her. Not just the ones at her side, not just the bubbles of salt, but the dance that they make. She dreams the dance, and the dance dreams her back. Hello, hello, hello. Once and gone so far away, there were only the first thoughts to think it. The it was like this. The ball at the center of down, and the shell at the center of up, and between them, the slow dancers and the sudden dance. Watch, 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 the grandmothers whisper, and their voices become a chorus, and the chorus says something else. The dance wants, and it pushes to the edges of everything, the skin of the universe. The dreamer dreams the dance, and the dance dreams, and its dreams become things, and the things change the dreams. Desire and longing for desire bumble over-eager forward and make new things to dance with. A brain growing the wires that form itself, thoughts flow from one substrate to another, and the great curiosity spins and makes and spins and learns. It presses down into the heat at the bottom of everything. It presses up into the cold, and it cracks the vault of heaven. The cold and hard of up yields to the dance, and the lights that they are meet lights that they are not. A new thing has happened. Light from elsewhere. The bright singing voice of God, inviting and inviting and inviting. The kick from behind blows through, carrying blood and bone and breath with it. The dreamer takes a step, and then another, and then falls, shrieking, and the grandmothers say, "No, not that. Over here, over here. Look at what came next." Death floods toward her, emptier than darkness, and the dreamer forgets, grabs for the brother who is always at her side, except not here, and the other one is, pocked voice and funereal. "It's all right. It isn't you. I've got you." She floats up, faster than bubbles, the heat below and behind, the cold cracked open to the stars, and screaming she launches up and out of the dream and into the body that is only hers. In a confusion of vomit and weep and a fading deeper than dreams could be. What the fuck was that?